Hey everybody, welcome back to the Bold Sidebar. This is your host, Jeff Horn, talking all things New Jersey Supreme Court. I hope you have enjoyed a couple of the interviews that I've had. Today we're back with three cases dropped by the court in the middle of April 2021. And one of the cases is something I've really been looking forward to, and it deals with the interplay of medical marijuana and employment. Candidly, I expected the first big marijuana case to be more of a drug testing, conduct, and wrongful termination claim that I foreshadowed when I spoke with Katie DiCicco a couple of years ago. But this case is Hager v. M&K Construction. It's a workers' comp case. The plaintiff here, Mr. Hager, was working construction, and a concrete truck blows up. Hager is hurled into the air and flattened like a pancake. He suffers terrible spinal injuries. M&K denies comp, and I can't believe this. Don't know this area of the law particularly well to understand how this happens, but denies comp from 2001, when the injury occurred, all the way to 2016, when they finally stipulated that workers' comp applied. So here we are in 2021, just to give you a frame on this entire case. So what's the case about? Mr. Hager, his doctors decided he needed to get off opioids, which apparently he's been taking for upwards of 20 years, and that medical marijuana was his best choice for pain management. Lesser side effects, lesser risk of dependency. And in New Jersey, prior to 2021, we have had for a few years a medical marijuana law referred to as the Compassionate Use Act. There's a big hole in the Compassionate Use Act in that private health insurance providers and government agency providers are not required to pay for medical marijuana. M&K took the position that workers' compensation ought to be treated the same and that the comp policy should not have to cover medical marijuana. Supreme Court says no. This is exactly the kind of thing that's envisioned under the Compassionate Use Act. That is, based upon credible medical testimony, what are the best options for the worker? Here, years of opioids, we know what that does to people, give way to medical marijuana usage. He's got chronic pain. It's a necessary and ongoing treatment. The carrier fought that back to no avail. Now, there are other, I think, very serious federal and state law, conflict of law issues that I think the New Jersey court may be somewhat pioneering in how they worked around that. So you've got, of course, the 1970 drug laws that make marijuana a Schedule I substance. In other words, a serious, dangerous drug that is to be closely regulated, and those that would possess, manufacture, and distribute are subject to federal criminal liability. M&K said, hold on, you're telling us we have to break federal law, we have to aid and abet, and essentially we have to commit a federal crime in order to provide medical marijuana for this worker. Indeed, federal law has not changed. The Congress has not taken up drug reform, in particular marijuana criminalization or decriminalization reform, as have so many states. But Congress has done something else, and it's a little sneaky, I think, by Congress, where members of Congress can keep pounding their chest and pounding the table about how they are anti-drug and pro-law enforcement and tough on crime and all of that, while for the past 7 years in a row, Congress has prohibited the Department of Justice from funding operations that interfere with state medical marijuana laws. How about that? You don't take any action that you think might be controversial, but you take money away from any sort of enforcement. Politics can be a bit of a dirty game, and certainly it has been played here with this medical marijuana business. Now, of course, again, this is 20 years after the guy's accident. Nonetheless, in 2021, what do we have? We also have a recreational marijuana law that is in the midst of being put together. And let's face it, it's not so hard to drive out of state and find a neighboring state where you could purchase recreational marijuana. So all in all, this is, to me, one stake in the ground on the overall marijuana law business. And my two cents is, or my prediction is, that you're going to find the New Jersey Supreme Court very solicitous of people that are utilizing marijuana. And when we get that employment case, or we get some employment drug screening case, it'll be interesting to see. But I suspect that employers are going to have a hard time excluding employees who test positive for marijuana on their drug screenings, right? That's a very interesting issue. At the same time, you're going to have accidents where people have consumed marijuana. How are they going to be viewed differently under the legalization law? Certainly, there is loads of case law that deal with auto accidents and the like where someone has consumed alcohol. Will the Supreme Court treat the alcohol-induced or alcohol-influenced accidents and the marijuana or marijuana-influenced accidents the same? So I'm really looking forward to that. Case number two, I'll call the No Escape Clause case. This is Huggins v. Aguilar, but those names have nothing to do with the real players here. Trend Motors is an auto body or an auto repair business, and a client, a customer named Aguilar, brought the car in for service, took a loaner car, signed a paper that said she had at least the minimum automobile insurance, $15,000 and $30,000. That's required for all New Jersey vehicles. So the Trend Motors and their carrier, Federal Insurance Company, had crafted the loaner agreement to say that Trend would not cover the loaner driver for any accidents, that they had no coverage, and that the customer was essentially insuring through their own policy. Digging deeper into the Federal Insurance Company policy, that policy had another exclusion that said, as long as the customer has the required $15,000 and $30,000, we offer no coverage under our so-called garage policy, call it a loaner policy. The trial court found that Federal's policy was drafted with an illegal escape clause. Indeed, the policy had a $1 million limit, and the trial court applied that limit to the dispute over whether there was coverage from this garage policy. The Supreme Court modified that finding, applying simply the $1 million limit that was set forth in the federal policy, and reformed it to $100,000 and $250,000, because that is what is required by New Jersey Administrative Code. All dealerships have to have $100,000 and $250,000 on all of their dealership vehicles. Justice LaVecchia writing for the court, writing for a unanimous court in this case. Next one is a little bit of a sad case, or a lot of a sad case. Parents of a 2-year-old child are tried for endangering, manslaughter, and murder. The child was killed by multiple injuries, including blunt force head trauma. This is State v. Raquel Ramirez and Jorge Orozco. Justice Fernandez Vina, writing for the court. Justice Albin offers a concurring. I'll mention it briefly at the end. The question is whether these two defendants who are similarly situated were properly, or rather, was the jury charge proper under the accomplice liability theory offered by the state. The Supreme Court adopts a key line from the appellate division opinion that the jury should have been clearly instructed that culpability under NJSA 2C:2-6C1C required proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the conscious object of a defendant's failure to prevent the commission of a particular crime was to promote or facilitate the crime. There was a confusing jury charge, so the appellate division had reversed the convictions. The Supreme Court finds as follows. The endangering convictions were not tainted by the bad accomplice jury charge. So those convictions are upheld. The manslaughter convictions are remanded essentially because of this accomplice liability jury charge problem. Justice Albin, again, cuts through it as he so often does and said this is a matter of duty. These people had a duty as parents to this child, both similarly situated, to prevent a crime, to prevent the baby's injuries, and that there's no need to remand on the manslaughter because they each had an independent duty that was breached and their liability rises to the level of manslaughter without even considering the role that accomplice liability had here. And allow me to jump back to the Hager case, the marijuana case, because I failed to share that this was a unanimous opinion written by Justice Solomon, who you probably know was a prosecutor, is certainly a law and order guy. And again, I think this really speaks to the mindset, the decriminalization mindset of marijuana, all the way up to our New Jersey Supreme Court and beyond. That's it on the three cases. I hope everyone has enjoyed, in particular, and I talked too much about this, my interviews with Judge Nelson Johnson, Boardwalk Empire guy. He's got the new book. I'm going to hit it one more time for you. Darrow's Nightmare. And it's about how Clarence Darrow, our famous, perhaps most famous trial lawyer, was tried himself in L.A. And of course, Judge Johnson does an amazing job putting his historian hat on and writes essentially poetically about a bunch of historical facts and puts it all together with all of the players and all the characters beautifully developed. So there you go. That's it for today. And see you next time on the Bold Sidebar.